Hello, Fiona Ritchie with you. Come along with me to the mountains of North Carolina, where we're at Traditional Song Week, all part of the Swannanoa Gathering, for a musical encounter with instrumentalist and vocalist Claudine Langell. Welcome to the Thistle and Shamrock. I would like to extend a special welcome to a dear friend of mine, and we are going to do a lot of blethering, but I thought I might encourage Claudine Langell to make a little musical introduction for herself. Swannanoa Gatherers, welcome Claudine Langell to the Swannanoa Gathering and to a chance for us to sit and chat with Claudine, learn a bit about her musical journey and understand a wee bit about what goes into all her music. Well, I should reveal that Claudine and I go way back, and we thought we could illustrate this visually. Bear with us. So, for radio listeners, Claudine is wearing a Thistle and Shamrock t-shirt, circa 1984, I'm guessing, looking remarkably fresh and new, picked up, as I understand it, in a thrift store. And I think my t-shirt, which says Touchstone, which is Claudine's band, we'll learn more about as we go along, from a similar time, dug up presumably from the bottom of a drawer or something.
Yeah, and it used to be black.
It used to be black.
Now it's grey.
And thank goodness it didn't go to the thrift store. So this is just our way of noting the connections that exist between us and how far back they go. Well, Claudine has had a very interesting journey, geographically, if you like, in life, led very much by her musical passions and inclinations and connections that she's made through time. And so I thought we would trace that journey with her and encourage her to share with us a bit of the music along the way. One of the things we know about Claudine is that her connection with the Canadian Maritimes is a very strong one through her dad.
Right.
Your dad was from?
From Martins River, Nova Scotia. And there was just a guy here from Lunenburg, so we were just talking about that. Yeah, he was born in Martins River, which is on the south shore of Nova Scotia. He left when he was fairly young because both his parents had died and he was the oldest in the family. And his sister was a school teacher in Mahone Bay in the area. And at one point, she got asked to come to America to be like an au pair type of person. And she did. And she made it possible for him to come and go to motor repair school in Chicago. And he ended up settling in Connecticut. So the thing that I felt from him that I remember of my childhood is that he always wanted to go back to Nova Scotia.
Was he from a French background with his surname? Or?
Well, it sounds like it, but it's more, they call it Dutch, but it really, they meant Deutsch. It was it was Huguenots that came over from Montbéliard, France, and they were a mixed, you know, a whole bunch of different cultures. A lot of German cooking in the area, the Lunenburg County area, which is the county we're from. And both of my grandparents were gone, so I never found out too much about their French speaking. But my grandmother was named Lillian Claudine, and that's who I was named after.
What sort of music would you have heard then in the house growing up?
Well, my father played. He played harmonica, and he had a great whistling style with tons of tremolo and vibrato, and he sang kind of like that, too. And he played jew's harp and all kinds of, you know, rhythm instruments and just loved music. Mostly I would hear him singing in the car when we were driving to Nova Scotia because he would be so happy to be going home that he would start singing and whistling, and, you know, it was great.
And that connection to Nova Scotia and all your travels has remained strong in you through him and through those early memories of all the trips up there, and you still make trips up there.
Yes, I'll be going again in August. I think the only time I missed a year was during the Beatles years. 1 year I stayed home to be a Beatlemaniac. I didn't hear a whole lot of live music there, but we all had wooden boats back then, and we would go out deep sea fishing and out to catch haddock and cod. There used to be lots of haddock and cod back then. We would dig the clams and bait the hooks and catch. When I was about 5 years old, I was fishing for flatfish right in the cove. I had a little tiny rowboat and just a rock for an anchor, and I'd just go out a little ways into the cove and pull in the flatfish. Then we would use those for lobster bait and the traps, and then, you know, everything was all used for something, and we'd go out and catch the bigger fish, and then the fish man would go around and bring them to all the little cottages and people in the area. So it's a lot of fun. I loved it.
It sounds like a fantastic childhood. We were talking earlier about how long Claudine and I go back together. From very early on, knowing Claudine, I think the first song I would have really associated with her was a song about Nova Scotia and a song about leaving Nova Scotia, which I'm sure meant a lot to your family, especially since you said your dad was so happy to go and so sorry to leave. So maybe you would share that with us.
Sure, yeah. And this is actually the song that I heard when I was growing up. And then I didn't hear it for a long time. And then, I don't know, it must have been Ian and Sylvia, or, you know, people were doing it again in the when I was in the Boston area. So I just thought, this is a great song. Actually, you know who? Johnny Beggin and Declan Hunt and a bunch of lads from Ireland were playing in this pub, the Plow and Stars in Cambridge. And Johnny Beggin was playing the banjo mandolin, and he did this song too. So that kind of brought my memory of it back. And then we ended up doing it with Touchstone. So sing along if you like. Ching!
the wars do alarm, the captain calls and we must obey. So farewell, farewell to Nova Scotia's charms, for it's early in the morning, I am far, far away. Farewell to Nova Scotia, the sea-bound coast, let your
I sang that at my aunt's funeral in Manchester, Connecticut, and the people who knew her there didn't even know her life in Nova Scotia. So, you know, they were kind of like, oh, well, thank you for bringing that to our attention, because we always knew her from Connecticut.
Wow, so that's fantastic. It's amazing how a song can do that and connect people. And I know you should never say this about songs, and I know singers don't make these claims about songs, but to me, that is only ever Claudine's song. That's the version for me. Lovely to hear that, and to root you in Nova Scotia, which of course we all associate with many types of music. Here we are down in another part of the world with other musical traditions, not so much the shanty sort of swaying, right, chorus singing songs we associate with the Canadian Maritimes. It's old-time music, it's Appalachian ballads and that sort of music. And there came a time in your life where you were drawn more to that sort of music, and you made your way, started to make your way south to, I think, as far as Virginia the first time.
Yeah, yeah. We were in the Boston area, graduated from college, no jobs, decided to head back to the earth and had some connections in Virginia. And we were doing things like, well, I was making limberjacks, the dancing dolls, the dance.
You made them?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
We would go down to the Independence High School, and they opened up the IA shop in the evening. And, you know, I'd be going in, and they weren't used to seeing women in the IA shop, and so they'd come up and spit tobacco to try to freak me out, I think. but it was all done in a very kind way, and you know, we'd use their table saws and jigsaws, and we'd go down to the Fiddler's Conventions in Union Grove and Fiddler's Grove, and slung on our backs all these dancing dolls, and then go play a few tunes. Larry Poole was the fiddle player I worked with then, and I would dance the doll, and we'd sing a few songs and sell a few dolls. We sold them pretty cheap back then. It was a lot of work, but we did okay.
You still have any of these lying around?
I do. Yeah. I think I have one left. They were really nice. We kind of we couldn't keep up with the demand. Eventually, we tried to go big time with them and get them in catalogs, and then we couldn't make them fast enough, so we had to ditch the whole thing.
Just imagine this pile of body parts.
Yeah, you're exactly body parts, right. Yeah, with the dowels, yeah, sticking the arms and the elbows together.
And so there you were, immersed then in old-time music, because you, yeah, were right in the heart of it with, yeah, all the fiddle festivals, and, mm-hmm, you must have then started to absorb some of that, pick up those tunes and,
yeah,
fall in love with that somewhat.
Oh, yeah, we loved it. We were doing all... I did a lot of singing then, because I had just recently been introduced to the mandolin. I met a Scottish guy in Jake Williams from Aberdeen in Boston, and just before I had moved south, he, I was saying, I'd really like to get better at this music. I'm, getting kind of sick of just playing backup guitar all the time. And he said, well, try this. This is really easy. And he had a really nice little mandolin. And I started learning a couple of tunes on it, and I really enjoyed it and started going with it.
And then that really took off for you when you went to Ireland.
Yeah.
Through the Boston connections that you just mentioned.
Yeah. Well, I started kind of branching off into the Irish tunes because I thought they were really fun on the mandolin, that they had, the melodies. And, at that time, I wasn't real aware of the division, but then they started falling into that category. So I met some Irish guys that were playing in Boston and they were just learning, too, so we all started playing together, and we started to really learn some stuff together. And at one point, they wanted to go home to Galway, and they said, let's all go play on the streets in Europe. We flew to London. One of the guys had a brother there, and we stayed there a little while. And then we moved on to Paris, and here we are playing in front of Notre Dame, playing Irish tunes. Not really very well, but with a lot of spirit. And they kind of led us. I mean, now you would never be able to get away with that. But we had a great time. And then they decided they just wanted to go home. So we all packed up and went to Galway. And I stayed there for a year and had a great time learning tunes.
I bet you did. And I think when I first met you, I think you were still wearing a Parisian-style beret or something like that. You used to, didn't you? It may not have been Parisian style. It may just have been Claudine style.
Fiona, I've worn a lot of hats.
You have. But so when you went to Galway, now that's, that's a name everyone, even people who haven't travelled to Ireland, will associate with great music and great musicians.
Yeah.
And you run into some fantastic legendary names in
awesome.
Irish music.
Every day, our routine was to go down to the pub for the noontime session. And it was Jackie Daly, Frankie Gavin, Charlie Pigott, Mortchin O'Connor, just some great, great players. And you just sit around at lunchtime and play tunes. And it was, so I had my tape recorder and I would just grab as many tunes as I could and then go home and try to learn them. And we had gigs every night. We would get £5 and all the pints we could drink. Now that's a dangerous pay scale.
But in spite of all that, your music came on in leaps and bounds, and you were mentored in a sense, or people were, I suppose, just naturally generous about sharing music and saying, "Hey, try this. Let me show you that." And you really started to perfect that flat pick tune picking out style that you have. And was it Charlie Pigott that helped you perfect that on the banjo?
Yeah, I mean, it was all shared at that time. Everybody was sharing tunes, and I never really even thought about it as a style. The ornaments and everything were just part of it, and I wouldn't have thought of doing it any other way because I wouldn't have known. I didn't know any other versions of the tunes, so those were the versions I was trying to.
So it's a very natural way to be learning music. It wasn't like you were consciously trying to adopt a style.
Exactly.
You were just absorbing music in the way that it always has been passed down, really, and you happened to be in that time and place.
Oh, we just loved it, too. I mean, we would follow the musicians around just wanting to learn the tunes, but we'd also go and dance and carry on, and it was just such great music. It was infectious.
Do you have a set of banjo tunes, maybe, that you would associate with that time, or that would give us an idea of the sort of style that you were getting into?
This first one is the Cliffs of Moher, and it's one of the first tunes that I had any success with triplets on. I hope I still have success now with it. It's been a while. We were near the Cliffs of Moher because we would go down and we would go down to County Clare. There's sometimes the waves are crashing down below, and there's a part of the tune that brings that back to me every time I play it. There's another jig after that called The Cook in the Kitchen that these are kind of old modal tunes that were being played at the time that I really enjoyed.
with Claudine Langell on the campus of Warren Wilson College at the Swannanoa Gathering in the heart of the beautiful Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina.
Yeah.
And Claudine, for the radio listeners, you were playing there a tenor banjo. People will also hear a different type of banjo played in a different style, what they call down here clawhammer style. Can you, just for people who are listening, describe how your instrument differs from that instrument, that more long-necked instrument, and maybe even how the style might be different?
Well, I mean, I don't actually play clawhammer. I've tried it a few times, and I absolutely love it, but it's a right-handed technique that I don't have. I mean, what I'm doing is really kind of the same thing as playing a mandolin, and I've got a flat pick, and this is tuned G, D, A, E. And because you don't have any sustain, like on a fiddle, you do these kind of triplets and tremolos, like... I'm trying to think of a slower tune that would be all tremolo. Well, maybe like a waltz or something. Yeah. When I first heard Breda Lewis from the Lewis family in Galway, fantastic mandolin player. She was the first one that I heard that played Irish tunes in that kind of style, and she just did a constant tremolo thing, very European sounding, and so I was influenced by that a lot too. And then with Charlie Piggott on the banjo, you when you get into the reels, you have a lot of quick kind of like.
Claudine Langell on her tenor banjo. We met up to share memories and music at the Swannanoa Gathering's Traditional Song Week in the summer of 2011. Stay with me to hear more about Claudine's bands Touchstone and Gypsy Reel. Musical links and details online at thistleradio.com. This is NPR. This is Fiona Ritchie. Claudine Langell is my guest this week, and our musical conversation is hosted by the Swannanoa Gathering at Warren Wilson College, North Carolina. But before we pick back up on that, I want to play you something recorded in London back in 1978. It's from the Bothy Band. The song is sung by Trina Niconal, and you will understand why I wanted to play it for you when you hear Claudine Langell tell the story of how the two singers first met. With them wherever we go.
I got a gig in the club called The Station in Carrboro, North Carolina, with a bunch of people from Boston. Unbeknownst to me, Trina was in town visiting Mike Cross, and I hadn't really met Trina in Ireland. I was in Galway, and I stayed there pretty much the whole time. I think I went to Dublin once, and she was in Dublin, so our paths did not cross there. That night when I was playing in the station with this, you know, sort of a pickup Irish band that we just kind of threw together, I was playing Do You Love an Apple, and Trina walked in. I was singing this song that was one of her big hits, and she got up and sang with me. And that was the beginning.
Did you know who she was when she walked in?
Oh, I recognized her. She's hard to miss. She's a tiny woman with a really great voice, and I'd seen her picture on album covers and things. And I think I had heard that she was in the area, but I didn't know she was right in Chapel Hill. And Trina started having an Irish session, and it would just be this monster session that we would do every week. And then, I don't know, somehow we got the idea that somebody wanted us to play somewhere on the road, and because of everyone's schedules, it got brought down to a quartet. Zan was game, I was game, Trina was game. I had played with Mark Roberts up in New England before, and I gave him a shout and said, "What do you think? You want to come down and play with us?" And that was the beginning.
From Greenville I came, all my virtues departed with the last I did feign from the strong darts of Cupid. I've suffered much grief and my heart's broke asunder. I can get no relief
of my trouble. I'll tell you without much delay of the sweet little lassie my heart stole away. She's a blacksmith's fair daughter on the flat river side, and I always intended to make her my bride.
I worked on river where the white waters roar, and my name I engraved on the high rocky shore. I'm the boy that stands happy on the dark whirling stream, but my thoughts were on money. She haunted my dreams.
I gave her fine jewels, the finest of lace, and the costliest muslins were formed to embrace. I gave her my wages all for to keep safe. I deprived her of nothing I had on this earth.
While I worked on the river, I earned quite a stake. I was steadfast and steady, and ne'er played the rake. For Camp Flat and River, I'm very well known, and they call me Jack Haggerty, the pride of the town. With another, she'd a long time delayed, and the next time I'd see her, she'd no more be a maid. To her mother, Jane Tucker, I lay all the blame, for she caused her to leave and go back on my
for something like Jack Haggerty, when we were putting that together, Mark would just say, oh, that sounds like a good one for the five-string banjo, the clawhammer banjo, and he would add that in, and then it would start taking a shape, and then we would kind of go with that shape. But we were all in this melting pot together, so it was great.
And you brought out an album, The New Land, and it really did create quite a buzz, and people were really taken by all the strong musical characters in the band, because there were strong voices, strong instrumental traditions, and they all seemed to meld together beautifully. And so it continued, another album straight after that, really, or quite close after that, yeah. Jealousy, mm-hmm. which was a bit of a departure really as well. It featured, well, the title of the album was after your song, one of your songs, yeah. And we bring in a new member at this point as well.
Skip Parente. Because we didn't have a fiddler. We were one of the few bands, you know, that didn't have a fiddler on our first album.
And the music took on a whole other dimension then and went from strength to strength. I mean, really, all this represents quite a golden age for music in and around Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Yeah. An amazing amount of musicians and musical energy and ideas. I guess at the time you were just living it. You weren't thinking, this is a special time.
Yeah.
But you do look back on it and realize that it was.
Yeah, that's true. We loved it. We got to go and play the Canadian festivals with the Red Clay Ramblers. What an adventure, you know. And so that's where we got to hear all these other great people, you know, Stan Rogers and a lot of bands, Trapezoid. A lot of us were on the road at the same time, and we became really good friends.
And the song Jealousy became one of the sort of key numbers, if you like, in any of your sets at festivals or at concerts. When you started it, the opening sort of notes, there'd kind of be a big riffle of applause, and people were excited to hear it. And without all your band members around you, I was wondering if you might sing it for us today.
I'll try. I'll try to fake the parts with the other people. I would like to say, too, that Michal O'Donnell was so much a part of our recordings. He was in the studio with us, and I think he had the magic touch. He was our producer. I didn't even know what a producer was. I mean, we were just playing, and we just did what we do, and he was so impeccable with the sounds and
this
making
is Trina's
sure the
brother.
Trina's brother, yeah, and he was like the fifth Beatle. He was the fifth Touchstone member.
While people are listening to you sing, I wonder if you might give us an image to hold in our minds of that album cover.
The line, my love's a golden angel and my champion in this war. The artist went with that and has a knight on the front of the an artist's rendition of a knight. What else do you remember?
A snake.
Oh, yeah, well, the snake's in there, too.
Yeah.
The snake's in the song
and
a sword. Yeah.
On the cover. That was when album covers were quite big.
I noticed people selling those albums on Amazon for $45, you know. I'm going to try to do the banjo part in the beginning.
Jealousy, you snake, you better come around no more. I don't need you in my dreams. I won't let you in my door. I must acknowledge your existence, but you better keep your distance, for my love's a golden angel and my champion in this war. When you courted me before, I was enthralled by your suggestion. I believed in your possession, grew accustomed to your sting. When my love was falling down, you wrapped around me to destroy me, but you left me with a memory to guide me in this round. Jealousy, you snake, you better come around no more. I don't need you in my dreams. I won't let you in my door. I must acknowledge your existence, but you better keep your distance, for my love's a golden angel and my champion in this war. You have have come again to tempt me, but this time I won't allow you to infect my happy outlook, to deprive me of my joy. For this time my love is stronger, in the end it will defeat you. It will laugh at you and eat you if you try your tricks once more. Jealousy, you snake, you better come around no more. I don't need you in my dreams. I won't let you in my door. I must acknowledge your existence, but you better keep your distance. For my love's a golden angel and my champion in this war. We are trying to perfect them. We are no longer ruled by greed. We are not slaves to selfishness. Jealousy, you snake, you are confined to your own pit. Recoil away, for this is it. We can make love without you. Jealousy, you snake, you better come around no more. I don't need you in my dreams. I won't let you in my door. I must acknowledge your existence, but you better keep your distance. For my love's a golden angel and my champion in this war. Jealousy, you snake, you better come around no more. For my love's a golden angel and my champion in this war.
Thank you.
Jealousy by Claudine Landell, who is our guest here at the Swan & Noah Gathering here on Warren Wilson College campus. You know, it's funny, but when you get to this point in doing what I do and having a chance to understand a lot about the music business and how musicians do make their living and touring, and toured with some of them just to get an insider's view of that life, and you would think that nothing would surprise me anymore, but you can still get surprised. And it's a little bit of an insight for you here with us and for people listening to learn that through the buying and selling of music and rights from one label to another, that Claudine, who wrote Jealousy, you know, doesn't have the rights over Jealousy and isn't sure who does. That's the story of music, really. And it's very interesting to learn that, you know, and I mean, you know, I hear things like that all the time. But it is disappointing to know that there is a layer of people that are working around music who maybe don't have the best interests of the musicians at heart. Yep. We learn this all the time, and it's true in all forms of music, not just in folk or acoustic music, you know. So there you go. Your journey continued then, I suppose. Touchstone was a fantastic success, but it was always going to be a matter of time before one or the other of you started to kind of move in different directions, and that's happened. And geographically, really, I guess you all remained very close friends, but you started to drift your separate ways. At which point, we should also say, speaking of the fifth Beatle, the other contender for the fifth Beatle has to be Rod.
Oh,
your,
yeah, my
your husband, who was the sound man for Touchstone, and very much the support mechanism of getting the band around, making sure everyone had what they needed, and always there, and still always there. So when you all did start to go your separate ways, you and Rod relocated to Vermont,
right?
Which is where we find you today.
He was funny, because being from Chapel Hill, he said, well, you know, I haven't seen much snow. So let's go to Vermont. And my brother had a place there, and I'm thinking, I've seen a lot of snow, but if he really wants to see snow, I'll show him some snow. And so we left Chapel Hill. I was very sad, but as you said, things were starting to change in a lot of ways. You know, a lot of our buddies were changing what they were doing, or a lot of the people we played music with were on the road all the time. So we'd be home and we wouldn't have our little music sessions because everyone was working, which is great, but we were kind of lonesome too. So we moved up to Vermont, which we were thinking we would only be there for maybe a year or so. And here I am, I'm still there. I really always wanted to come back, but you know, sometimes things happen.
And you developed a studio together.
Yeah, yeah. Rod was our sound man, and he did a great job with Touchstone. It's hard to mix the electric clavinet and the acoustic instruments and to get it very quickly. Something like Philly Folk Festival, where you have 20 minutes to play a set and no time to do a sound check or anything, you know. So he got pretty good at it, and he had done sound before when he was in Chapel Hill. So we started putting together the pieces of a studio, and now we have it in our barn and in Mount Holly, Vermont. We call it Mount Hollywood. And Rod gets some, you know, he gets all kinds of stuff. We had a Jamaican opera singer do a record. We have a great duo that, if you ever get a chance to check them out, they're called The Pleasants. It's Amanda Rogers and Mike Mata. They did a wonderful recording in our studio. Great harmony singing on all original songs. So, you know, we've had some good little projects going on, but I ran into some other musician friends to play with when I moved to Vermont, and I ended up being in a band with them called Gypsy Reel. That's the band I've been playing with since probably 1986.
And you've recorded, of course, at your own studio. And
yeah, we've been lucky. So we've been able to do a lot of recordings and just kind of
and traveled
fancy-free.
All around and over to the UK and done
all kinds of that was the other thing we shared was the wanderlust. We go to Guatemala almost every year and play there, which is really amazing. We've developed a local following of Mayans, and you know, they come out in their full dress and like our music and listen to our CDs. And we've been to Crete. We played in Cretan tavernas. And we did a really nice thing in Ireland. We played a little tour in Ireland and Wales. Wales was one of our mainstays. England, of course, because Graham, the fiddle player, Graham Parker, is from England. So we would go back quite a bit. So yeah, we travel a lot. I was in Dublin.
What we've enjoyed with you is a lot of great stories, end to end, linked together with tunes and music, and that's sort of been your life. You're sort of led through, you know, friendships and connections, and it's all kind of got a soundtrack, you know, with your musical life. So it's, you've shared so much of yourself with us through it all, and we really appreciate it. And I'd like to ask you to tie things up for us by singing kind of an anthem, I suppose, that you've written for Vermont, living in the snow. Oh. And sing it here in the heat and humidity of North Carolina.
This was written the first winter I spent back in Vermont with Rod, and the snow was really deep. The dog would go out and disappear off of the front steps. And I wrote a new verse this past winter, because this past winter was one of the worst I've ever seen. Okay.
Well, you ask me what I'm doing, and you ask me where I've been. So I'm writing you this postcard just to try and fill you in. I've been, whoa, whoa, living in the snow. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Oh, you can come and see me if you got a 4x4, but you better bring a shovel if you're coming to my door. And it's really coming down now, living in the snow. Well, sometimes it's a picture and sometimes it's a dream. Sometimes it's like styrofoam, sometimes like shaving cream. When you're whoa, whoa, living in the snow. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Oh, you may think that snow is white. I'll tell you what I found. It's pink and blue and purple when the sun is going down. And it's really coming down now, living in the snow. Now I have got a fleet of snowmobiles, got boots and poles and skis. Got to keep the body moving and load up with antifreeze. When you're whoa, whoa, living in the snow. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Oh, there are fancy hunks and bunnies if you make it to the slopes. But you better bring your fat wallet or don't get up your hopes. And it's really coming down now, living in the snow. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Me 30 minutes just to put on all my clothes. Got to squeeze into my thermals from my ankles to my nose. Cause I'm whoa, whoa, living in the snow. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Oh, I have learned to do the snowplow, and sometimes when I'm alone, I huff and puff cross country. You should see my herringbone. And it's really coming down now, living in the snow.
The last verse now. I got two more verses I gotta get. I'm doing the fiddle break now.
Drive too fast on ice, you're gonna wind up in a ditch. When you're whoa, whoa, living in the snow. Whoa, 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 whoa. Oh, you may have a cell phone wired straight to AAA, but there is no reception in these mountains anyway. And you're spinning all around now,
25 winters later, here we are on Facebook chat. Never thought I'd still be shoveling. Now, how do you like that? Well, you're whoa, whoa, living in the snow. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Just when you think you've seen it all and learned to make your way, we get hit with thunder, snow, and lightning bright as day. And the roof is caving in now. Look out, living in the snow. Well, I guess I better close now, cause you know it's almost spring. After 7 months of winter, we can really dance and sing when we're whoa, whoa, living in the snow. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Oh no, you can't come and see me now. Our road is like quicksand. After winter comes a mud season. I hope you'll understand. And it's still coming down now. Living in the snow. Living in the snow. Living in the snow. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Sorry about that. Yeah.
That was some insight into last winter. We shared a similar dramatic winter. I want you all to thank Al Pettaway, who's done a fantastic job on the sound, our friend, the wonderful guitarist, yeah, Al Pettaway. Yeah. And wow. Thanks to everyone at the Swannanoa gathering. Special nod to Doug Orr in the audience, whose dream this was. And to Julie Glaub-Weems, who's with us, the organiser of Traditional Song Week, which is our special week here at the Swannanoa Gathering. And put your hands together, please, one more time for the lovely Claudine Langell.
Thank you so much. Fiona, thank you, my dear buddy.
Thanks once again to our special guest this week, Claudine Langell. Find out more about the Thistle and Shamrock on the web at thistleradio.com, connect on Twitter at Fiona Ritchie, or via Facebook at Thistle Radio. The Thistle and Shamrock is a service mark of Fiona Ritchie. Support for NPR comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. The Pew Charitable Trusts, working with states to improve the accuracy and lessen the cost of voter registration at pewtrusts.org, and the Poetry Foundation, celebrating 100 years of Poetry Magazine, online at poetryfoundation.org. This is NPR Music.